Today, this episode of Visions is dedicated to the husband, son, and extended family of my guest, Desiree Richards. A few weeks ago, I interviewed Desiree, and just a few days after, her husband informed me of her death. And today, I simply want to extend sincere condolences and best wishes to her family as they grieve the loss of Desiree, a wonderful woman, and her spirit will continue to live on. God bless. Hi, and welcome to Visions. With me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby. And today I'm extremely honored to be chatting with Desiree Richards from St. Vincent. We'll take a serious dive into mental health, what mental illness looks like, and how the family can support someone living with a mental illness. Welcome to Visions, Desiree.
Thank you, Yudeli. It's indeed a pleasure.
Okay, so Desiree, let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in education?
Okay. It's Desiree J.K. Richards, the wife and mother of one young adult son and the first of seven children. I actually grew up in a rural village called Tromoka in St. Vincent and the Grenadines on the mainland. I'm currently the director acting for the Department of Adult and Continuing Education within the Ministry of Education and the National Reconciliation. I joined the public service in 1997. When I entered, I was the business skills instructor. Then over the years, I was promoted a couple times until I'm now acting as the director. I've done a couple trainings, which I may, if necessary, indicate later. And so those I think would have prepared me for the current challenge.
Okay, cool. So, what would have led you into this career in education?
Firstly, I didn't give it much thought before, but both my parents were teachers. And I think education chose me. I didn't really choose education because when I went off to university, how many years back, I actually applied to do and would have completed the requirements for an associate in business administration. And then I decided at some point that I will just shift and stay longer and do the entire degree in business education. And
Okay.
from then on, it has been the way forward. Eventually, just 6 years ago, I graduated with my master's in educational administration and leadership. What I realized from doing two spiritual gifts inventories that they both show that I am gifted as a teacher, a leader, and an administrator. So I guess I was just born to be an educator.
Nice. So let's look now. Can you tell me when did you first notice, changes in your mental health, and how did that impact your personal and professional life?
Well, around 1996, 97, and I was still on campus in Trinidad after completing my first degree. Then I became ill and was diagnosed with depression. And it's not that I would have noticed that this is a mental or emotional situation affecting me here. But as the diagnosis, surfaced, then I had to finally conclude that yes, I am unwell mentally. So that was then. And then when my son, my only child, when he was 5 months old, and that's in April of 2023, that's when I got my other diagnosis. And that at that point, the doctor said that I was actually, I was showing signs of postpartum. And I suspect it was easy to conclude that because I had a baby. And since then, it has basically changed or evolved and is now considered bipolar. So we could say since 1996, 97, thereabout. But even before that, Yudeli, upon reflection, I realized that as an adolescent, around 11, 12, 13, that I would always pull into myself, you know, and get quiet and sulk.
Okay. Right?
At that stage, and even long after, and it never occurred to me that I was mentally ill.
As you reflect, do you think that there were any specific pressures or experiences, either in your personal life or your work life, that may have contributed to your mental illness?
Maybe indirectly, because especially work-related and so on. I think I would have been predisposed, because I have one or two close, well, I have a brother who's also mentally ill, and one or two other close relatives, mm-hmm. you know? And I've always been a hard worker, you know, physically, working physically hard.
Right.
But not that I may have got any kind of pressure or anything that could have led to my becoming ill. Especially since I indicated that as an adolescent, I showed signs.
Yes.
You know? So it probably was just a matter of time for it to be, you know, shown to the world that I was not well.
Right. And how would you say that you received the diagnosis of having first postpartum depression and then later the diagnosis of bipolar?
Unordinary, as they say in Trinidad, normal. You know, I never actually like say, you know, I never ask why me, and threw my hand up in despair as if that was the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was calm, and I believe my faith in God and his ability to heal and at least give me the peace of mind if healing won't occur and all that sort of thing. So I just accepted it as if it were a diagnosis for maybe a flu, you know?
Right.
I was extremely calm, and I have since been calm regarding that.
Nice. That's great to know. Mm-hmm. So how would you say that your family, your colleagues at work, you know, and at church would have received this information when you shared it with them?
Well, they would have recognized,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, because in any case, as mentally ill, as I've learned from my experience, we depend a lot on the observance of those around us, those close to us, as you've categorized, family, co-workers, and so on. So they would have recognized. And my family, especially my immediate family, my husband and my son then, who would have been a little boy, they would have been anxious to take me to the psychiatrist or to the clinic so I can be made well again, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
My colleagues, they would have heard that I'm not well, hospitalized, whether I would have been at home or in the mental health rehabilitation center. So they would have come and shown their total support. Let me know that they're there with me and that sort of thing. Some folks would have brought gifts, stuff to build me up, like grape juice and other things. So okay. The support would have always been there, even though I never actually say, well, okay, I am bipolar, I'm postpartum or whatever. They would have gotten the information and they would have responded accordingly. Well, of course, and I never paid attention, but I would have sensed after with experience that usually not every single, let's say, co-worker who would have, you know, shown that kind of interest for one reason or another. But generally, the support would have been overwhelming. Even just backing up for my extended family, you know, my siblings and so on, whenever I, you know, regained composure and consciousness and stuff, and my mother would always say, oh, well, this sister, wherever she is, sent this money or the other, you know, they would have all sent financial gifts and stuff to assist in whatever way they could have assisted. So I really cannot complain about that kind of support from my family, immediate and extended, my work family, and I would say my community generally, even my neighborhood.
Wonderful, wonderful. It's always good to know that the individual who may be experiencing illness, whether it's a physical illness, a mental illness, that they have the support of not only their immediate family, but the community and their workplace. That is tremendous. So I tip my hat off to each one of these. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Desiree, Was there any time, any moment that you felt like stepping away from your career because of your mental illness?
Oh, at no point at all, Udeli.
Okay.
I always believed that I would conquer. I was and I am still determined to thrive and to strive.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful.
Yes, and then with the kind of support structure that I had, for example, you know, one time I said, I wonder if I were in a different ministry, if the response would have been the same. For example, Udeli, and for our listeners, there would have been periods where I couldn't, like, go out, especially when, for my earlier portfolios, like business skills instructor and program officer and so on, I would have not been able to go out to visit the classes or visit the different zones and all of that. Those particular periods, some of them were lengthy, especially when I was like in the dark periods of depression. And at no time did I hear from any of my superiors that, okay, we can't take this on, and I think you may have to consider, you know, turning the towel, wrapping up, and maybe take it, be medically boarded and sent home, because I would have seen and heard of others with similar experiences who would have, you know, gotten that kind of mandate. But That's just to emphasize this sort of support that I would have gotten over the years from the Ministry of Education.
Fantastic, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So as a senior leader, how would you say your experience with mental illness has shaped your leadership style and priorities?
Okay, so I have become even more compassionate. Mm-hmm. You know, being a leader, as you said, a senior officer, many of my staff members at different points would have come and confided. And like one young lady said to me just a couple months ago, she said, Miss, I just do not have the desire to get up out of my bed and come to work. I literally force to come and, you know, and we chatted, and I would have encouraged her to go to a counselor or something, which she agreed and said she had been seriously contemplating. So when I related that to my hubby, and I said, I couldn't act differently because I know folks would have been tolerant with me in any case during my periods of need and care, you know?
So yes.
With that kind of experience that I would have had, I have to be similarly caring and exercise patience and that sort of thing, right? And then I appear those who may be emotionally challenged and may not even say it, they may be quiet about it, then I could understand that here, my experience has told me something is wrong. So I be here, I can mentor. And I think being ill would have actually given me an extra tool in my arsenal to say, all right, so I can mentor, I can guide, I can say, actually, I'm going through it. And many of them would open their eyes wide because some didn't know. Many pastors I would have told, because I'm quite open with it. Mm-hmm. And it would like, true? Say yes. And I would explain to them, I say, I'm not boasting, but I want you to see that all that I've gone through, and regardless, I have succeeded. And if that could have happened to me, similar experience can be yours. You know, so right. That has given me that kind of approach to leadership with the experience, to be patient and compassionate and to be all-inclusive, not be tempted to practice favoritism and that sort of thing. Because you never know. You never know whom you just want that positive outlook.
Mm-hmm. So Desiree, you mentioned showing compassion and giving more support. What other changes do you believe need to happen in the education sector to really provide more support to staff who may be experiencing, as you said, emotional or mental challenges?
I think that we need to have more counselors. I know sometimes we encounter the financial strains, you know, but more effort needs to be made to put counselors in every single educational institution at all levels. Counselors even from the early childhood level, And then, of course, from primary, because I spoke about where the four signs of my mental disorder started. I'm saying in adolescence, but probably may have started before that. And probably if my mom reflects more on others, they say, oh, maybe earlier. So in the presence of more counselors, and it should be intentional with the training that they would have to look out for those who are predisposed and who are actually suffering. Because I've noticed, and others have been saying, that the number of persons who are suffering with mental illness, that has increased, especially from COVID, when folks had to be inside, had to be inside. And then in our context in St. Vincent, then we had the volcano. And of course, each time we have our eruption, at some point, Barbados would get a little ash somewhere. But yes, that is critical, because the numbers are increasing, and they are increasing rapidly because of various reasons. So the counseling has to be beefed up. And I would add that we have more sessions with our parents at our PTAs and other meetings, so that parents themselves, because my mom didn't have a clue what was happening to me as an adolescent. Pulling away, she probably thought, well, maybe I'm just that kind of individual. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, you know? So more education and more awareness, along with having counselors at every level, I would suggest.
So how do you balance your demands of this high-pressure job that you have, you know, having a family as well as your mental health? How do you balance it all and keep that stability?
So, powerful question. Simply, I seek God's guidance. Earlier, I said earlier, I'm a woman of faith. I seek God's guidance, because it can become overwhelming. I know how critical remaining healthy is, so I will ensure that I take my meds. There were periods when I didn't, because I would have been going, and beside that, I thought, well, okay, I'm exercising regularly, I'm eating on time and nutritious foods, and so I'm good, right? But I realized that, no, I have to ensure that I take my meds. And then I have to be organized at work. I must be at home as well. I must be generally organized. And then not being flustered. I must delegate at work. I have to empower and delegate officers to perform tasks that maybe generally leaders would want to hug and micromanage. Okay. But I keep micromanagement out of my daily practices at work, because that could have the potential of promoting bad mental health. But at the same time, I'm not going to be assisting my staff if I want to do everything. But involving them would alleviate my load and also empower them, make them more prepared for the task ahead.
Yes, yes. Well said. Well said, Desiree.
Thank you.
So, as we look at breaking stigma, what misconceptions about mental illnesses, mental health that people have that you wish they understood?
Yes, firstly, I would want them to understand that those persons who suffer from mental illness, they are in no way, shape, or form inferior to others with maybe physical and other maladies. And with care, one can achieve anything. You know, there's this misconception. I don't know how it is among those who be listening, but in my country, a lot of folks think that when you are mentally ill, that's it for you, you know?
Yes.
You can't do anything. You have no hope. It's like you will be sick for life. And like they say, well, they call it the C word, which I tend to avoid. But they say once crazy, always crazy. And of course, as I said, I don't accept that, you know? So that kind of misconception, we have to say, okay, I was relating my experience not too long ago, and somebody was like, so you have to be taking medication for the rest of your life? I said, but there are persons who are taking medication for high blood pressure and sugar and asthma and whatever else, and they may have to be taking it for the rest of their life. So that kind of, as you say, misconception, I would like folks to know that we are all on the same page, regardless of what the situation is. they should not be ranked, and the world shouldn't be seeing mental illness as the worst of the worst.
Right.
It is not. All illnesses have their challenges and struggles, different medications and their side effects and so on. And everybody, regardless of what we suffer, even though we are suffering from mental illness, we ought to be respected and given an opportunity to exist without being snubbed at and ridiculed and gossiped about and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that over the years, since you have been experiencing mental illness with your bipolar, that the conversations have changed the outlook around mental illness, especially in the employment sector?
Not much, because the thing is, Udeli, most of us don't speak.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us suffer in silence because we don't want to risk being marginalized and all the negatives, stigmatized and so on, that come with the mental illness.
Okay.
So it's rare that you'll hear folks like myself who would come out and say, okay, I'm mentally ill. With that, if folks remain low-keyed and they suffer in silence, then the conversation would hardly commence and continue, you know? But I know I would have made a lot of difference in the way I encourage others not to stay there in silence and mm-hmm. be open, that kind of thing. That would have helped. But the conversation is usually low-keyed. But, of course, the Ministry of Health and even the Mental Health Rehabilitation Center, from time to time, you may have a couple programs on the health word, that sort of thing. But it's slow in picking up. It's very slow in picking up. I am hopeful that that would change in the not-too-distant future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as we get ready to wrap up, Desiree, how would you say your experience has changed your outlook on life, leadership, family, you know, the community?
Okay, so my experience, yes, Udeli, and those listening, my experience would have given me patience and confidence that absolutely nothing is impossible with God, nothing at all. And further, my experience has also awakened the reality, as I said earlier, that we are all affected in some way, and that looms large. Some challenge or another, whether physical or emotional. And of course, our families, especially our immediate families, and my family, I would say, is the premier support structure. So if we have families who are supportive, then we ought to be grateful. And that has my experience with the support of family, immediate, extended, and other structures have made me extremely grateful, which means mm-hmm. that, you know, I can't be going around like some proud peacock and think that it's anything that I would have done of myself to be where I am today. If I didn't have a supportive family, and I'll give you this experience, Udeli, if you have the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was at our former location, work location. We were viewing this young man, a few of us during the lunch break, looking over the veranda. And I saw this young man who used to be our co-worker, walking on the street, you know, so distraught and untidy and all of that. And I said to my colleagues, I said, you know, the difference between him and myself is that I have the support he has none. By then, his father had passed. And even before he died, he wasn't even looking in his direction. And then his mom would have migrated and probably unable to return and so on because of her immigration status. So that always looms large in my head that I have to be grateful because my family would have been integral in the way I am, in what I've, you know, what I've done and where I am today. If my husband had decided, like I've heard of experiences where spouses at that point when their wiser husband grew in, that they thought, well, this is a good time to end. I think I could spend the rest of my life with somebody with that kind of illness. So I can't overemphasize here that we need our family. And family, to some, it may be different. A family may be a group of friends. or the color
Wonderful.
of co-workers here.
Okay, so the last question I have for you, Desiree, is, is there a message that you would like to share with anyone who may be feeling overwhelmed or alone right now? What would you say to them?
Yes, so how about reaching out to someone? You may be convinced that you are not well emotionally, then go and see a doctor, maybe a private physician who can encourage you to probably seek counseling. They may even be on the right path to recommending a counselor. But bear in mind that you're not alone and your situation is not hopeless. All is not lost. And what has happened to me with my roller coaster, my deep, depressing moments and my numerous manic attacks that land me several times in the mental institution. You may not get there if you tap it early or if you stick on, because I must say that I ended up in the institutions several times because I took myself off of my meds. But if you stay on your meds and you seek support at various levels, there must be someone with whom you can speak and about whom you have confidence, things can and will get better.
Well, Desiree, I want to say thank you so much. I truly appreciate your candid sharing and
My
allowing
pleasure.
Us to see how you have coped with your mental illness, the level of family support, and of course, the wider support from your community and your workplace that has allowed you to remain standing and contributing to the educational sector, amongst others, in your native homeland of St. Vincent. Thank you so much. And I must say, I have to show my respect to you and all others who have been experiencing mental illness and are fighting to live life.
It has been my pleasure, Udeli. Thank you very much for having me. And I look forward to meeting you in person and for us to have many more conversations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Udeli Wickham-Ashby, and my very special guest, Desiree Richards from St. Vincent. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. So until next week, love yourself, love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. Until then, ciao.